Welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips, getting you in the game. And after a historically bad week 7 in the NFL, we're going to change things up a little bit today. Me, Ollie and Matt have picked our three big takeaways and we're going to talk through them. Plus, we're going to be joined by Ben Mortimer to look forward to Thursday night football from Touchdown Trips. You're listening to the Gridiron Show. Well, hello. Welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips, getting you in the game. And we will have Ben Mortimer on from Touchdown Trips later in the show because we do head off to Houston, Texas, baby, in about 8 or 9 days' time. So very, very excited about this. Really looking forward to it. That's coming up later in the show. But what we're going to do, because week 7 had 4 teams being shut out. That's the first time that's happened since 1980-something in a week. I did have this written down, but I can't get on the internet. There were 7 teams who didn't score an offensive touchdown in the same weekend. That's not happened since 2001. And the other thing is, in the Gridiron Picks game, the winners of the week, including Matt Sherry, had 14 correct picks.
What?
I had 13. Like, the first 5 pages of the board are people with 14, 13, 12, which just shows you there was a real lack of upsets as well. It was all kind of went with type. So after the best Thursday night football game we've seen maybe in years to kick off the weekend, followed by a cracking Monday night football game, that Sunday slate of games did not live up to expectations. And so what we're going to do to just mix things up a bit, we thought about doing mid-season power rankings. We realised that was a bit of hard work and a little bit early. We're going to do, me, Ollie and Matt have all taken our 3 big takeaways at this point in the season. They can be from this week or they can be from the season as a whole. And we're just going to talk through those takeaways. So plenty for us to get to. Ollie Hunter is here. Matt Sherry on the line as well. Hello, boys.
Hey.
I enjoyed that. That was weird. I really liked it a lot. How are we doing, guys? It's,
that would have been Tom Brady's, Brady's first word.
Has Brady, how old is little Tom now?
He's 11 months old, nearly.
Oh, so he might be talking.
Not ready for them first words yet.
He's kind of babbling, which sounds a lot like mama, a lot.
Sounds a lot like his dad, Ben.
Oh, you got there first.
Absolutely.
Great work.
Yeah, one of us was going to have to come out with that.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm thinking... go on.
He's also crying quite loudly now in the background, as you may be able to hear.
That's devastating. Devastating news. What have you done to your child?
You're out of order.
Nothing. I think he's going for his afternoon nap, which is always a cause for consternation, but ultimately it's rewarding for him when he gets into it.
A highlight of the day is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
I've decided, guys, that I need to start a spin-off podcast.
Oh, yeah?
The pure reason for this is that there was a conversation. So we got into that quarterback conversation on Sunday, which we're going to get into in the show. But then there was a separate conversation within a group that I'm in about whether cucumbers are a pointless part of a sandwich, an unnecessary addition, or whether they add something genuine. And I put it out as a Twitter poll, and it went 54% towards people who don't like cucumber, think it's pointless, whatever. So I just like quote tweeted saying, you know, not quite as decisive as I'd like, but a better result than Brexit, at least. So we'll look at the will of the people. And the will of the people was decided that it should be the title of my new podcast, where basically I look at people's micro-fascisms. So tube etiquette, grammar Nazism. And this spun wildly, wildly out of control to the point where we've got so many great ideas for a new podcast. So we've got That Will Do. Each episode, listeners send in suggestions. They get put in a hat. I draw them out and I have to do whatever the suggestion says on there.
Yeah, yeah.
The Best Will in the World, where I meet other people called Will, but they're all going to be better than human beings than me. That's the idea.
Yeah.
Will I Am, where I meet famous other Wills and find out... No, famous Wills, not famous other Wills.
Oh, you're an absolute disgrace.
Oh, damn it. One of the...
that's disgusting. Oh, that's...
God, that's probably the worst.
That's the worst thing that you've ever done.
Last Will and Testament. I look at people who have left large inheritances and find out what they've done with it. There's so many great ones. I never realised how many ones there are. Against Her Will, that's not as bad as it sounds. That's
it really does.
Jesus,
you can't even have that. This is a family show and you bring that up.
That's where Sarah, finds people who are like at the top of their field and pits me against them. Dixon suggested the first episode should be Anthony Joshua. I'm not so keen on that. But yeah, there's loads of them.
Why can't Dixon
Willow the Whisper?
Anthony Joshua.
A one-off challenge where I tried to set the Guinness World Record for eating the most whisper bars in an hour. There's so many great ones.
Yeah.
So many great ones.
I don't really see
where the one-off challenge fits into the whole Will name thing.
Well, it's against her will. Oh, which one? The Will of the Whisper.
Yeah,
it doesn't really work as a lengthy podcast. Yeah. There's not many episodes in it, but, you know, it's all good.
Could be a nice documentary, couldn't it?
Will be the death of you. Will travels to Switzerland for a week-long outside broadcast where he mans the Dignitas Clinic. Oh, God.
Who came up with all of these?
A lot of them were me and Dixon having a very long conversation on Twitter. It was all a bit much. But I wanted to share it with
everyone. The only way that you generally like talking to Dixon is when it's about you.
The only way I like talking to Dixon is when it's via electronic forms and I don't have to see him in person.
Great point.
It's kind of perfect. Shall we get to our big thoughts and topics? I haven't come up with a really clever idea for this. Has anyone got an idea for a good name?
I hadn't really thought of that either.
No, great.
No.
Let's just do it then. This is our 9 takeaways, our big 3 things, our 3 people's big 3 things.
I've got it.
I'm workshopping it.
We're going to triple down.
Yeah, that'll do. We're going to triple down. Well, imagine a triple down burger with 3 chicken breasts.
We call it the triple option, given that's a NFL/football term.
Triple option down.
No, that doesn't work.
No, triple down option?
It's either triple down or triple option. I quite like triple down because it reminds me of burgers.
It could be 3 downs.
Triple doption?
3 downs, yeah. But you feel like maybe you have 3 downs and then a punt and then you just have one last thought at the end of the show, which is just a random thought that is the punt.
Quite like that.
Because it's a 3 and out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
3 and out?
There we go. 3 and out. We've come up with it. Well done, guys. Up top. We've done brilliantly there.
That's so sweaty, your hands.
I'm so hot. It's such a weirdly hot day. Is the music channel up at the moment?
Yes.
So you're both famous and hot.
3 and out! Great. Who would like to start? This has been really well workshopped. I'm going to go to Matt Sherry first. Matt Sherry, where would you like to start with your first down in 3 and out?
I would like to start with the double Super Bowl hangover that we've seen and kind of the contrasting fortunes of those teams in that one. I think the New England Patriots, based on Sunday night, where I was not at all confident of them winning, as I told you guys on TalkSport on Sunday. But I think what I've learned ultimately is maybe the Patriots did the very unpaid thing at the start of this season and kind of felt themselves a little bit and maybe didn't take his opponents as seriously as they have in the past. And then suddenly, when a big game is in town, Sunday Night Football, they just look like the same old Patriots again. So I think there was a little bit of a Super Bowl hangover for the Patriots. And when you look back at it, understandable given the nature of that victory. But I think I now look at the Patriots and in complete contrast to a few days ago. And I did say this had probably happened, but I now look at them as the class of the NFL again. Despite part 2.
Well, no, let's talk the Patriots first. Let's talk the Patriots first. Because the fact is that, yes, the Patriots did have a good performance on Sunday night. And Tom Brady was excellent. He's moving the way he moved the pocket, the way he moved in the pocket.
The running game got going, which was the key.
It was a really good performance, particularly on that side of the ball. However, the reason that we did our top 5 in a power ranks on Nat Coombs show yesterday, the reason I'm not quite ready to put the Patriots atop of it yet is that the play calling and decision making from those Atlanta Falcons was so dreadful that I'm not quite ready to buy into the Patriots defense yet. I just want to see the Patriots defense do it against a good team before I start going, yeah, they are at least competitive enough to take them all the way through the playoffs.
The opponent to me is irrelevant because of what the issues were on defense, which was bizarre breakdowns in communication and everything else. So the way I look at it is, how did the defense execute? I mean, execution is execution regardless of the opponent. And that's been the Patriots' issue. And it was outstanding on Sunday night, in all forms, in all phases as well. I mean, they were superb on special teams as well. And my feeling ultimately is that the Patriots are now going to round into mid-season form and are probably more like the team than we thought that we thought they were at the start of the season than the team that maybe I thought they were last week.
So moving on to the second part of that, then the Atlanta Falcons and their Super Bowl hangover. Now, I watched the I watched the 49ers back for some bizarre reason. I don't know why it brought me to do that. But I kind of, the more I watched it, the more I realised that Kyle Shanahan, even when it was a bad performance this weekend, this was such a big feature last year. Almost, I reckon on 65, 70% of their snaps, somebody's going in motion. It's a tight end, it's a running back, it's whoever it might be. And what that's doing for your quarterback is allowing them to discover whether or not the defence is in man or zone. Unless they're a really good disguised defence, it gives them that. And for a quarterback like Matt Ryan, who does have the basic skills, but maybe not the intangibles you get from the very top tier guys, that gives him a lot more to work with. He has less reads. He might only have to read one side of the field. Like, he knows who might be open-minded. It makes it much easier for him. And when I watched the Falcons game on Sunday night when we were doing it live, they do nothing like that. There's no motion. There's no intelligence in the offense. Before you even get to the play calling itself, and we can all look at that third and one going for the pass, fourth and one going for the jet sweep, without even a running back in the backfield to try and fool the defense and get them to bite on the run. It just, the way that they're running the offense right now, even with the quality of the pieces they've got, is just not conducive with winning football games.
It isn't, but then, I mean, what did they expect to happen? They've basically brought a guy in from college to be the coordinator who is being asked to run the system of the previous coordinator when all of the staff with the previous coordinator have either gone to Los Angeles or to San Francisco with him. And that ultimately comes to the point that I'd make, which is if this Atlanta season heads in the direction that it could head in, they need to look seriously at the whole setup in the summer. And I'm talking not taking off the table, looking for a new head coach. And the reason for that is ultimately extremely knee-jerk. But the reason I say it is... Hysterical!
Tight spiral balls.
the second one wasn't meant to be there, but it works. Carry on.
The reason I say it is because I am starting to wonder how much Dan Quinn with... a lot of the questionable stuff that happened in that Super Bowl, it was the thing we were always going to be looking for this year, has lost that locker room. And to me, the 4th and 7, 4th and 8 plays, which were both utterly ridiculous. I mean, I've heard some people say the first one was acceptable, and I'd agree if it was like 4th and 3, but it was 4th and 7 or 4th and 8.
I thought it was 4th and 5 or 4th and 6, the first one.
No, it
and
was
the second one was 4th and 7. One of them was definitely shorter than 7.
No, the short one was the 4th and goal.
The second one.
Which was about 4 and 4 or something.
The first two in midfield, I'm pretty sure were 4th and 7, 4th and 8, something like that. But ultimately, they were ridiculous. And what it said to me, especially the quotes from Dan Quinn afterwards about how he did it because he really trusts his team and he believes in them, and I just wonder whether that's a head coach desperately trying to claw back some kind of cachet with his locker room.
I think it was the Patriots being so in their headspace. That's what I thought it was.
I think it's a combination of that and the fact that I just think he's trying to prove something to the players, and he knows they've checked out a bit. And ultimately, you could understand it if they've checked out a bit, because if I was a player on that team where I basically did everything to win the Super Bowl and had it taken away basically by bad decisions from me head coach, I would be looking at them and I wouldn't be looking at them the same way. So I think Atlanta, in their current form, you may not hear from them again as a Super Bowl team. And they'll probably bounce back and win it this year and I look like an idiot. But based on the evidence we've seen so far, I think if it continues on this path, they need to look at everything, because it's not easy to rescue that back. I mean, the Seahawks kind of do it, but ultimately, they haven't been near the Super Bowl since that play. They've been competitive and they've got to the playoffs each year. And I ultimately think Pete Carroll's good enough to sort it out in Seattle. But you look at what's happened to them since, and I would say that what happened to Atlanta was worse even than the Seattle one.
Yeah, I agree to most of an extent with that. It was 4th and 7, then 4th and 6 later in the game. I'm sure it was shorter than 7, but it was only 1 yard shorter. Let's move on and look at our second topic. I'm going to take up this one, Ollie, because it kind of bleeds into your first one. I want to talk about Monday Night Football to an extent and the Philadelphia Eagles, but most specifically the mania surrounding Carson Wentz this past weekend. Now, we had a conversation on our WhatsApp, which then bled on to Talk Sport, about which of these quarterbacks, after Jared Goff put up a decent performance at Twickenham, and we're going to get to that kind of separately, but who you'd take out of the Prescotts, the Wentz, etc. of the world. Carson Wentz is now back-to-back on primetime, put up performances which make him look like a quarterback way, way beyond his years. He's making plays which, you look at the 66-yard in the air, it was whatever it was, 80, 78, whatever it was, the touchdown throw where the ball went 66 yards in the air. And that was one of the best throws I've seen from anyone in the last couple of years in terms of both the touch, the spiral, or everything that went into that. You then look at, obviously, the sack escape everyone's going to talk about. But actually, it was the drive where Jason Peters went down, which was a huge thing and is a potential huge thing for the Eagles going forward. And it's the reason why we can be excited right now, but it could be the sort of injury that kind of derails their season a little bit. He continued for the rest of that drive to climb the pocket, something they worked on massively this year, to keep his eyes downfield, to make plays under pressure, to make good decisions under pressure, to work through his reads. And these last two games are where I've gone from, OK, Carson Wentz is a guy with talent, but I'm not seeing it translate, to where it's really clicked with Carson Wentz for me. And that's why right now, if you asked me that same question we were discussing on Sunday, I would be Carson Wentz with a bullet based on what I've seen the past 2 weeks.
I mean, yeah. The way that he's playing is lights out. It really is. The way he's going through his reads on the field, quickness of getting the ball out.
The MVP talk is ludicrous because it's so early in the season and I don't think he's been the best over 7 weeks. And actually, it's probably Tom Brady at the moment. But just on the last 2 weeks alone, you can see why people are getting that excited, because it's been that good.
Yeah. Yeah. Sherry, you agree?
He's been absolutely spectacular. And I mean, from an unbiased perspective, Brady to me this year is looking better than he ever has.
I've already said that. Is a biased perspective because you said it. I've decided.
But listen, I think there's a couple of things. The prisoner of the moment hyperbole that you see in the NFL is like nothing else. I mean, I saw an Eagles beat writer tweet that Wentz and Zach Ertz were the best quarterback tight end combination in the NFL, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But
Ertz might be the number three tight end in the NFL right now.
Yeah, and the Patriots have both the number one quarterback and the number one tight end with a 7-8 year connection in the bank. So, I mean, that's what I mean about people just living the moment. And I think people are living in the moment a bit in this discussion, because Wentz has been awesome the last 2 weeks. His career to this point, over exactly the same sample size, is not in the same class as Dak Prescott's. I mean,
but I disagree with that in terms of what he has personally put on the field with what he's got around him.
He's shown me
more than Dak Prescott has, because Dak Prescott has had, and don't get me wrong, it's a 1-1A situation, but what he has shown me as an individual, in terms of what he has done to elevate the players around him and to elevate the play around him in moments where it's all going wrong, which doesn't happen for Dak Prescott very often at all. Because actually, Dak Prescott the last couple of weeks, when you look at his performance, I mean, the 49ers is a bit of a, particularly with Eric Armstead now out, is a bit of a, you know, misnomer as to how you take that as a situation. But you look at his game against the Packers and the week before where they played somebody else and put 30 points up. He was brilliant those 2 weeks, but he is put in a position to be brilliant. That's only really started to happen more for Wentz as that line has settled this season. And I have seen more from him that says that if you took him and put him on a currently bad NFL team, he would elevate their play more than Dak Prescott would.
See, I just disagree with that, because I think this Eagles team is beyond loaded. I mean, they've got maybe the best, certainly a top five defense in the NFL.
You say they've got the best tight end in the NFL.
They don't quite have the best tight end in the NFL. Yeah, you were right when you said I think he's probably the third best. I would think the Eagles' receiving weapons are pretty good this year. The thing that stands out to me with Dak, and ultimately this is something that we can't judge Wentz on yet because I haven't really seen him in this situation, is the drives, I think, in Pittsburgh last year, the drive before the Rodgers drive in the playoffs last year were just unbelievable. Everything you want in a franchise quarterback, and for him to do it as a rookie was absolutely incredible. And we've not seen any drop-off whatsoever this year in Dak Prescott. And they came into this year with Prescott light years ahead of Wentz. So for all, Wentz has been unbelievably good the last 2 weeks, and I think that he is going to be a really, really good player. Right now, I would take Dak every time over him, and we'll see whether that changes. If Wentz plays like he has the last 2 weeks, then absolutely, it's back on the table, but it is just 2 weeks. And I mean, Alex Smith was great for the first 4 weeks of the season, but I would probably...
I still think Alex Smith's been great the last 2 weeks of the season.
He has ultimately, but I'm saying he was at a much higher level in the early weeks of the season. The point I'm making is it's up and down over the year with quarterbacks. But if Wentz can sustain this, then it's... Yeah, I mean, we are nitpicking here because they are both clearly very, very good. And the future of quarterbacking in the NFL looks like it belongs in the NFC East.
And look, that's really exciting because we have seen a drop. We've seen Carson Palmer out for the season, maybe the rest of his career. We're seeing drop-offs elsewhere. Ollie, I know that one of your first down of your three and out was also on young quarterbacks.
Yeah, I want to look at it from probably the other perspective when we see Brett Hundley come in and only complete a pass to a Green Bay receiver, the longest of which was 17. No Green Bay receiver or anyone that caught a pass went for over 17 yards. If I read this out to you, 4 completions, 7 attempts, 107 yards, 0 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, you'd be forgiven for thinking that that was a guy that came in at the end of the game when the quarterback had done brilliantly. It's your backup that's come in. That's Mitchell Trubisky. That's the entire game for the Chicago Bears. John Fox has
They won by 2 touchdowns.
Which they won by 2 defensive touchdowns. Eddie Jackson, brilliant. John Fox is playing counter-attacking football like Tony Pulis and parking everyone on the bus. It is disgusting. If I was a Bears fan and I had to go to Soldier Field, one, I'd be very depressed. But two, I'd want my money back because that is rubbish football. Horrible football. So I'm wondering, are these offensive coaches and head coaches, John Fox, I don't know who the offensive coach in Chicago is, but Mike McCarthy in Green Bay, are they stifling their young quarterbacks to try and get a result no matter what, run the ball and not trust their young guys to make plays? Carson Wentz last year was trusted to make plays. He's been trusted to make plays this year. Deshaun Watson this season has been amazing because he was trusted to make plays and he's made those plays. He's made the throws. He's made the runs. Jared Goff has looked okay, but as I know Matt Sherry will agree, the game plan for him has been a lot of dump offs to Todd Gurley and he isn't looking. He isn't looking as good as Carson Wentz is looking.
I think it's that kind of same argument about head coaches that put a player in too early because they know their own job's on the line. You're kind of saying, are these guys stifling the future for these quarterbacks because they know their job's on the line? It's like, win no matter what the cost. The Bears don't need to win no matter what the cost. They need to get better as a football team, I think.
I think the Bears and the Packers are two very different cases. I think Trubisky, I will agree with Ollie if it looks the same in 6 weeks' time, because ultimately their aims for the season need, yes, we want to win games, and John Fox in particular to try and keep his job, but they also need to be developing Mitchell Trubisky. And so in 4 weeks, will he be throwing more passes? In 6 weeks, will he? And you'd like to see a bit of a curve. I thought that Brett Hundley's performance on Sunday and generally the game plan was a damning indictment of Mike McCarthy, a guy who ultimately has always done a great job with quarterbacks. It was like Brett Hundley had arrived on Tuesday in Green Bay and picked up the playbook then. I mean, at the end of the day, you've invested 3 years in the guy.
Yeah.
If he isn't good enough, then get another backup quarterback. You know that Aaron Rodgers is a guy that puts himself at risk a lot. I mean, he does with the way that he plays the game. So you need a good backup quarterback. And again, maybe it improves. It was Hundley's first start. But I just thought it really surprised me, to be honest. But maybe it shouldn't surprise me because ultimately that whole offense is crap, isn't it? The Green Bay New York Giants offense has been figured out heavily in the last couple of years, I think. And Aaron Rodgers is just such a transcendent talent that in spite of that offense, he is able to be amazing. So I think it's different circumstances. I think I'd look at Chicago and say they've won most of the games with Trubisky. They've played well with him. So they're doing the right thing, provided they start to develop it. I think the Green Bay situation is a real indictment on the coaching
staff. But I actually think that on that indictment on the coaching staff, the other point to that is that actually you watch the first half versus second half of that Green Bay game. And yes, they didn't capitalise on turnovers, etc. But at least they let Hundley do something. When it was those runs with his legs and people were getting excited about it, they utilise what skill he does have to do something with it. Yeah. The second half, they like did the opposite of what a team should do as somebody grows into a game, which is take the reins off more. And actually, they chained him down more and made him do less. It was bizarre.
Do you know what it was? Green Bay had a tendency when they're up in games to do prevent defense. It was prevent offense.
Prevent offense.
It was ridiculous. And I just wish they'd do something a bit like, and I almost want to punch myself in the face for saying it, a bit like Bill O'Brien has done with Deshaun Watson, and give Watson the team, give Hundley the team, and see what he can do. Because otherwise, Green Bay are going to lose every game by at least two scores, and that's not fun.
Especially when the report was out there that Rodgers could potentially come back late in the season in the playoffs. Like, you still win now, if that's the case. If you can just sneak into the playoffs, you could go into the playoffs as a wild card team. And if you've got Aaron Rodgers a quarterback, suddenly you're one of the big contenders again. But I think it's not just on the offensive side again. I mean, a couple of interceptions in that game basically saved the defense's bacon. But again, when you want that defense to step up, it just doesn't, because it's talent deficient. And that, to me, is an indictment above the coaching staff level, which is the personnel issues that I and you, Ollie, have discussed ad nauseum on this show. And I think there are some huge problems in Green Bay that ultimately is another example of just how much the waste and the prime years of one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen.
Right. Shush. Let's move on. Let's take a little break and then we'll go to second down.
For the bang.
So, let's start with Matt Sherry. Your second down of your three and out, please.
My second down of the three and out is how interesting the season this has been in terms of, as much as I think New England are going to round into shape, and I can see Pittsburgh, who I've been down on doing it as well. It's the real year of the middle class in the NFL, in that I ultimately think that there may not be a really elite team at the moment. The three I look at are New England, Pittsburgh and Seattle, who I still always believe in because they're such a mentally strong team. But I don't know about you guys.
I've got a real problem with the Seahawks thing this week, and this is not good. This was nearly one of mine, but I'm just going to throw it in there quickly, is that we did these top five power rankings this week, and I'll tell you that the three or four, the top three that were in almost everybody's were the Steelers, the Eagles and the Patriots in whatever order they wanted to go. And then what you tended to find was four was the Chiefs in most people. Most people still believing in the Chiefs. And then five varied between the Rams. We had a few Vikings. And we had lots of people saying the Seahawks. Now, I'm not saying the Seahawks are a bad football team, because they're obviously not. But getting another late win over a team who we may be getting overhyped by because of their win over the Denver Broncos, and having to do it by relying on the brilliance of Russell Wilson, not on the brilliance of the coaching. Seahawks are not a top five team to me at the moment. I still think they'll round into one, but I would not put them in the top five.
I think they are, based on the fact that if they went into anywhere, say they went into Fox tomorrow, I think Seattle would play that game close regardless. And I know that they have been blown out in a couple of playoff games over the last couple of years, but they're such a mentally tough team. And when it comes to the playoffs, that is ultimately what matters. Look at the Super Bowl last year,
Let's talk about your middle class. Let's talk about that. Let's not get ourselves sidetracked, because we've put this format in and now I'm getting away from it. So, this is the year of the 8-8. I think we're going to have more 8-8 teams than we've ever had in the history of time. Or 9-7 or 7-9 teams.
I've got a question for you. How many bad teams are there in the NFL? And starting the AFC, I think there's two bad teams in the AFC. And one of them won't be bad once Andrew Luck comes back in the Colts.
I was going to say.
And then I think you've got literally the Cleveland Browns, who are, the rest of the teams can basically beat each other outside of maybe a slight semi-elite who are a little bit above the rest. But to me, there just aren't that many bad teams in the NFL this year. And I'm trying to think now about the NFC.
So the Giants, the 49ers. And you know what?
The 49ers are the only obvious one.
Do you know what? I think the Cardinals without Carson Palmer and the Buccaneers right now.
Yeah, absolutely. But then you would look at the Buccaneers and say, well, ultimately, you could still back them to win most weeks because they've got a lot of talent. But I don't think they're outright bad. I think the only outright bad team is the 49ers. And even then, there's an argument that they're at least competitive. So for me, it's just a year of maybe it's not a year of good football teams so much as it's a year of, well, everybody's kind of clumped together as being average.
It was the reason that I was annoyed by week 7 that the number of games that went to the favourite was so high, because actually we've had the one thing that's been really enjoyable this season is that we've not been able to predict where it's going. And actually, I completely agree. I think it is the problem is the season of things very much levelling out. But I also think that we might reflect on this season, and we've talked about the Carson Wentz factor and in the Eagles and a few other bits and pieces. But with those ageing quarterbacks actually genuinely starting to fall off a little bit at this point, maybe I think this is the year that we really look at a year of transition and a new class of teams coming through. And I think that's
a new class of quarterbacks as well, yeah. Will. I mean, who are going to be the guys who separate themselves from this pack of good, very good quarterbacks? And you could probably put the teams in with them because it'll be the same jump.
So
who
I think,
are going
I
to
think
be those ones?
Maybe a transitional season, but a positive transitional season. We talked about the Bucks being bad, and Ollie, I know that you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
Second down. I'll get it some audio if we do the show again. I'll get it all sounding really good.
So the Hard Knocks effect. I think the Buccaneers have been affected by the being showcased on TV, us as a world looking into their organization, and almost playing up to it. And I think the fact that they have had this incredible amount of spotlight on them, and Jameis Winston especially, Jameis Winston's got away with it slightly. Now, if you look at his stats are up compared to the overall yearly stats. Overall yearly stats, you know, comparatively. But I don't think Jameis Winston's actually playing that well.
Should Dirk Cutter and the entire Buccaneers coaching staff very much be feeling on the hot seat right now? Because I think so.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I mean, it's a couple of things. Dirk Cutter, I said this during the Hard Knocks chat in the off-season, I can't really stand head coaches who are basically de facto
glorified coordinators
side of the ball.
Yeah.
And he is just that. The only way you can get away with it is by doing what Tom has done, is building such a good coaching staff in the other areas that it counters it. So basically, he said to Wade Phillips, you run the defense. He said to Jim Tressel, you run special teams. I'll oversee the offense and I'll have like a general bigger picture view as well. That's the only way it can work. And with the Buccaneers, I'm not sure Dirk Cutter is that guy. I also don't think that Mike Smith's zone defense works in the modern NFL.
No.
And I look at like Lovie Smith's second coming in the NFL and how it really didn't work in Tampa Bay. And I think, does that work in the modern NFL? You've got to mix it up on defense a lot more. So for all that defense is talented, they're not getting the results that they should, because it's predictable. A good quarterback can take it apart. And yeah, I think it's a major failing of the coaching staff. There's more than enough talent in that team. And we're seeing outright mutiny at the moment, aren't we, with their players. So this is the point I wanted.
I was kind of getting to. TJ Ward is a player who, yes, actually, I agree with him, should be getting more snaps in that defense because he's a better player than Chris Conte. That's fine. And I think they really like, actually, Justin Evans, their second-year guy, emerging as their free safety. The problem is, and we talked about this a little bit with the Patriots and your concerns ahead of the Falcons game, which never showed up because of the Falcons play calling. Back to that again. But when you're playing that kind of soft zone defense like these guys are, the way that works is if you are going hard at the quarterback, if you have got ends and you can get central penetration and you can get pressure with four, And this is not a team that can do that by any stretch of the imagination. Robert Ayres doesn't look like he's working out. Chris Baker was complaining that he wasn't seeing enough of the field, but neither he nor Clinton McDonald are getting pressure up the middle. If I'm Gerald McCoy, I'm livid that I'm at the rest of that front four, because I'm basically putting in all of the work, taking constant double teams, and nobody else is showing up at the moment. And it is a problem that, yes, Kawan Alexander and Avonte David, who are both playmaking linebackers, have missed time this season. But that front four is a real, real problem if they're going to run that system that they're running at the moment. Whereas if they had the corners and the right defense to play a tight man defense, then actually they've got a front four which can stop the run and get a little bit of pressure, and it would be fine. But in that scheme, with that front four, it just doesn't work whatsoever. And that's why I think the Buccaneers are a bad team at the moment.
Yeah, and I agree. And the last three defeats, by 5 points, by 5 points, by 3 points. And the offense will always keep you in the game, but it's that the mentally fragile defense, the scheme, is just entirely letting them down. And we saw that Mike Smith didn't cut it as a head coach. Now he's not cutting it as a defensive coach. I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just have to cut him and move
that.
On.
I'm all for that. Right, still to come, we'll be looking forward to Thursday Night Football. My second down is the Twickenham experience this weekend / the LA Rams. And I can just, this can go out as a rant. Nobody else even needs to get involved in this, because I'm aware that I was the only person at Twickenham this weekend. I can't believe the level of negativity from a very small percentage of people we're still getting about Twickenham. The NFL did an amazing job this weekend of really pulling up their socks and making it a much, much better experience than last year for the fans. There was a second tailgate which had giant screens so you could see what was happening on screen at the first tailgate. The queues were better. The access was better. The food and drink was better. The queuing for that food and drink was better. I understand some people had some problems getting soft drinks and hot drinks, which admittedly that is something that needs to be sorted longer term if, you know, you're going to be having freezing games. But everything about the experience was much better, and everything about the stadium is just more conducive with a great atmosphere. And it was an amazing atmosphere. Add on top of that the wonderful tribute to Kevin Cadle in the first quarter, which just got the most noise I've ever heard at a game of NFL, maybe ever. People really, really giving Big Kev a lot of love, which is fantastic. They added the shuttle buses on afterwards, which dealt with that problem of the trains. Like, I got the shuttle bus back to Waterloo direct, and it got me there twice as quickly as I got back on the train last year. And people who got the trains said that the queues were a lot short for the train. So everything works out a lot nicer. The game itself, not a great one. On paper... on the Twickenham point.
Some of the complaints I saw on Twitter as well were really not NFL issues, in that it was just complaints about getting to the stadium. I mean, that's just where the stadium is.
It's not just where the stadium is, but you've got people going, well, if you're from outside of London, it's harder to get to Twickenham.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know that get a ticket for any of these games, don't
that's
you?
That's not true if you're coming from the southwest, from Wales, from Birmingham, from Manchester, from all of those places. It's actually easier to get to because you're on the right side. However, if you're coming from the northeast, from Yorkshire, of course it's easier to get to Wembley because it's on the M1. That's ridiculous to use that as a reason. That's based on where you live. If that matters that much to you, move. Like, if that's really what matters to you, is the access to the stadium from where you live at home. There was one guy who complained, and I'm sorry for calling out individuals, I won't give a Twitter name or anything. There's one guy that complained that it took him 5 hours to get home, and he lived in the Midlands, and then revealed that they stayed for an hour in the tailgate watching Red Zone, and then they went, and then the trains were only hourly, so we had to wait quite a while for a train.
Well, that's Sunday everywhere.
He went after 11 p.m. and I went, well, so at least an hour to an hour and a half of your 5 hour journey was you standing around drinking beer and watching football. That's not part of the journey. And then you didn't check the train times in advance. How is that anyone's fault but yours?
The other thing as well is, I mean, ultimately it's not like they can build a whole transport infrastructure for one NFL game. I mean, it is what it is, isn't it?
And hey, guess what, guys? White Hart Lane is ludicrously difficult to get to.
Yeah.
So enjoy
that. It's not going to be much harder than anything that we've seen.
It's not that bad, but it is not also easy. There was talk about them building an extra tube station there, an extension off the line, and they haven't done it. So that's going to be interesting to see just how much those people complain about that stadium. But at least their seats will be a bit nice and comfy. So
the parking situation that,
that's the one negative
crazy.
With Twickenham, I think. I don't think it's a hugely comfortable stadium to sit in. But, I mean, neither is like Old Trafford, for example. I think Wembley is really comfortable, but that's because it's the biggest and most marketable and the natural stadium, everything. Yeah, and the newest, I mean, and you would hope that, that the Tottenham Stadium is more comfortable as well as a newer stadium, but that's just
I will say, the majority of feedback I've seen has been positive on what the improvements are. I just think there are some people. There's one guy who really came at us last year on Twitter and was really negative. And everything we tweeted, every individual tweet from my individual accounts, he attacked. Everyone who said they didn't like it, he joined in on them. He started doing that again this weekend. And I tweeted the guy saying, did you actually go to the game this weekend? And he completely ignored me. And I don't think he did. So how can you comment on it? Right, I'm done with that. I'm done with Twickenham.
Can I quickly say, I think...
No!
People are they're comparing it to the Wembley experience. It's a totally different experience. And if you want authenticity, if you want it to feel more like a game in the States, like a game at in Philadelphia, like an old stadium like that, that's Twickenham. And it, I think that's where it works.
Right. And for, just very quickly on the LA Rams, I had them as my fifth team in my power rankings right now. I am fully buying in on their defense. I'm fully buying in on when Mark Barron's fit with a play that they get out of the linebackers. They're so quick and that it really complements what they're doing. And Wade Phillips mixing in the difference between getting pressure with the front four and the blitz packages. The offense is working so well. The offensive line was phenomenal on Sunday. One of the best offensive line performances I've seen in person in a long time. And not just in protection, but old men like Andrew Whitworth and Roger Saffold getting up the field, making blocks at the second level for both Todd Gurley and also for the wide receivers. And yes, to an extent, they're hiding Jared Goff. That's fine. It's working. I think the Rams are a playoff team this year. Right. We are going really stupidly long, even though the point of this format was to be quick. So third down, Ollie Hunter, third and short, please.
Yeah, and I need a drop for this.
I don't know which one it's going to be, but let's see what can happen. I've actually got that one ready somewhere. Ah!
Kick watch! Now, kicking, I know it's not...
kicking?
It's not the sexiest of subjects to get into, but we've seen so many games this year decided... in overtime with kicks, and we'll see it every year, but games decided before overtime with kicks, games within a kick, kickers having monster games, the kicking position. We saw this year Morten Andersen get into the Hall of Fame as a kicker, the first special teams guy to do so. The amount of kickers that have gone out injured, Dan Bailey did it last week, Jeff... Was it Hurd?
Jeff Heath.
Jeff Heath coming in.
Jeff Heath was just amazing.
It was great. What a hero. If we were doing our gold, silver, bronze, maybe we should do that for this. Maybe if we were doing our gold, silver, bronze, he would be in it. But he was great. But the amount of kickers that are going out, and then you've got Mike Nugent coming in for Dallas. Nick Folk was out for the Bucks, and Caleb Sturgis has gone out for the Eagles. Jake Elliott has come in and he's become a cult hero. Kicking has become such an integral
thing this year, isn't it?
It's a really integral part, and the amount of kickers going down and the kicking carousel. I don't know whether there's just a point to this. I just wanted to raise it that it's far more...
The guy
more...
is drunk, but
yeah,
there he goes!
Right. I just wanted to raise it. It's far more important this year.
I just wanted to talk about kicking.
Seabass, he may not get his job back.
I think Seabass will get his job back, but then I think they've actually got a tradable asset in the Italian. Bizarre.
To Vecchio, yeah.
But there we go.
Sorry, there we go. And it was a quick one, so that's why it was my third down. I think I fell short of the line. On fourth, I'd probably go for it if I was the Falcons.
Yeah, you're going to need to punt away, I think, mate, based on that performance.
Hey!
Matt Sherry.
I think mine is something we've kind of gone over with a lot of the other ones, in that the NFL has a head coach problem. It's just dreadful. And I mean, this year might be a bad time to do it because I think we've got two really good ones who've come in Sean McDermott and Sean McVay, and a couple of others who have the potential to be good. But like we mentioned, Derek Carr And even, like, I think we'll get on to John Harbaugh later on, who's been a very good head coach, and I think will be again elsewhere. But
Mike McCarthy.
He's not playing McCarthy. But I think ultimately, and I'm about to write this column after we've done this podcast for the next magazine, so I'm going to look into it further. But I reckon if you rewound the clock back to 1990 or somewhere around that point, I'm going to pick a random week within that, and I'm going to look at the head coaches and the head coaching matchups in a given week. And I reckon there was probably, I'm thinking Jimmy Johnson, Don Shula, like I'm thinking maybe 6, 7, 8 guys who were Hall of Fame head coaches, or maybe people like Don Coryell, who was a bit of an innovator and a real kind of guy who should be in the Hall of Fame. So I'm interested to see how many guys were Hall of Famers and fringe Hall of Famers. And I'm going to ask you two guys a question now. Of the 32 head coaches in the NFL, how many you'll get in the Hall of Fame?
Right, so Bill Belichick.
I think there's one. Guaranteed. With Pete Carroll as a fringe possibility, if he has some more good years. And Andy Reid is the other potential if they ever win a Super Bowl.
I think if John Harbaugh won a couple more Super Bowls over his career, there's potential there. I think it would need, there needs to be more to his career, but I think he's a guy who is in the conversation longer term. And also there's younger guys who it's far, you know, Sean McVay's 30 and already coaching in the NFL. So there's potential there, but it's far too early to say.
There's also potential he's not coaching a 33, isn't that?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So,
but the point I would
I think
make
if Pete Carroll wins one, there's a question there, a conversation there.
I think Carroll's the second guy who has a chance. But the point I'm making is that I reckon even in 1990, maybe not with Jimmy Johnson because that was at the start of their run, but there were multiple coaches where you'd have been able to look at the start of that year and say, he'll get in the Hall of Fame. He will. Now it's like complete dumpster fire, isn't it?
Yeah, basically. So pretty horrendous.
That was a great one. I think you made your first down there, mate.
Yeah.
Just.
Thanks, mate.
I think Sherry's made the first down and more. And change. Well done, buddy.
That was basically Sherry was like Carson Wentz in that rush running play.
Yeah,
he was.
The pocket is collapsing. Four men around him.
The guy is down.
Have you heard?
But there he goes.
Have you heard the Merrill Reese call of that?
Yeah, it's outstanding. Yeah,
Merrill Reese's call. Who is the brilliant long? In fact, I might try and get Merrill Reese on the show this year if the Eagles keep playing well, because he's the long-term play-by-play caller for the Philadelphia Eagles and one of the very best in the game. But he literally goes, oh, they've got him. He's escaped! He's genuinely like, oh, they've got him. Like, he says they're going to need however many yards for first down. Oh, the pocket's collapsing. They're coming in. Carson, no, they've got him. Oh, wait, he's escaped! And the co-commentator literally goes, I thought you said they had him.
Yeah.
And he just goes, they did!
They did! I don't know how he got out!
Oh, it's genuinely really funny and well worth a listen. I can't. It's very difficult to do mine in short form, so I'm just going to put it simply. The Steelers' performances over the last 2 weeks have me back buying into Pittsburgh like I was preseason. They had a rough patch, but it's all about the defensive side of the ball right now. And I know that Martavis Bryant is being a whingy little so-and-so. And actually, I still think Martavis Bryant, I think he's a tradable asset even with the issues he has in the locker room. Because
without doubt.
Because I think he's a better wide receiver than Juju Smith-Schuster. Ben Roethlisberger just doesn't have the deep ball anymore to get Martavis Bryant in the game.
Martavis Bryant has the talent to be the best wide receiver in the NFL.
I think that's overstating it.
He is insanely talented.
I think he has the talent to be a number one receiver. I don't know about the best receiver in the NFL when you stack him up against guys who have more to their game than him, like the Julio Joneses of the world. But
Julio Jones. I really do, in terms of the everything that he offers in terms of physicality, speed, deep throw. I think he could be awesome.
But the defensive side of the ball, Joe Hayden has been unbelievable this year. He's raised the game of Artie Burns as well. They finally got some pass rush with Bud Dupree and TJ Watt, who's just exploded out of the gates. I love their front three in Cam Hayward, Javon Hargrave and Stephon Tuitt. They've got great speed at linebacker as well.
Shazier is one of my favourite players.
They've got a defence which would carry most teams to the playoffs and deep into the playoffs. And then on the other side of the ball, they've got Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. Yeah, yes, the offence hasn't still quite got there yet, but you know, I still think there's time for them to figure it out. And actually, we don't need to say it again, Matt Sherry, so you don't need to say it again, so I'm stopping you from saying it. Big Ben might be the one thing that holds this team back longer term from a Super Bowl. But the Steelers' defense is... Go and watch that game this weekend. They were phenomenal.
The only question I'd ask on the defense is, can they be that good against an elite quarterback?
Yes.
And that's it.
I believe
that
it.
That isn't a perfect matchup.
I believe
like
it.
Kansas City.
I'm just looking at the 1990 season, and... Wow, the divisions are all over the place. There's different teams.
It's the Phoenix Cardinals.
Yeah,
the
Atlanta Falcons are in the NFC West. The AFC West has the Seattle Seahawks in. There's the Los Angeles Raiders. This is amazing.
Ollie just discovering NFL history, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
Brilliant.
Before your ears.
this is great. I hope I want you to pick week 7 of 1990. In fact, why don't you go to week 7, 1987, Matt Sherry? Because then you're going exactly 30 years into the past.
Yeah, I could do.
It's
I mean,
not 30 years, is it?
Another guy I forgot was Joe Gibbs, 27. Bill Parcells.
Yeah, that's why I said 87, mate.
Oh, 87?
Yeah.
I thought you said, sorry, mate, sorry.
It just doesn't listen. Just doesn't listen. Just learning that the divisions used to be different. What's going on?
I knew that they used to be different, but to see it right before your eyes is interesting.
Right, it's
Don Coryell retired in 1986. I wanted him to be one of my examples, so I might go to 86.
Fine. Right.
Well, yeah.
Good for you. Right. Let's let's crack on and let's get Ben Mortimer on the phone. Right. Let's take a look forwards to Thursday night football now. But before we do that, we're going to get on one of the premier Raisin fans, Raven fans in the UK.
I know they're doing badly, but to call them a bunch of raisins is out of order.
It's been a difficult morning. One of the premier Ravens fans in the UK, as well as the head of touchdown trips and MVP travel, Ben Mortimer, joins us on the line now. Hello, Ben. How's it going?
Good day. Well, okay. Thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very well, mate. Very well indeed. Thank you. And look, we're going to have to talk about your Ravens, get it right eventually, in a moment, but... I don't know, me, Matt and Ollie have been talking about this off air, but it's now less than 10 days before we go away. And I am insanely excited for our tour and all the extra little bits that are being planned around it. I genuinely can't wait.
Yeah, no, it's really crept up, hasn't it? So we're really close. It's just over a week, I think, till we meet the initial guys that are coming into the Heathrow hotel the night before for a beer or two, and then an early start on the Saturday the 4th to fly out to Houston. But yeah, it's all come together nicely. The plan's coming together.
And actually, the games themselves are kind of panning out really nicely as well, because I think we've got three games from an NFL perspective where they all look like they could be quite tight games in terms of the teams that are playing, but also great stadiums, great locations. I'm dead excited about being in New Orleans. I was talking to somebody about that, Greg Rosenthal from Around the NFL the other day, about New Orleans, and he was giving us a recommendation of a few bars we could go to. Mm-hmm. I'm also particularly excited because on the first night we get there, we're going to karaoke. And it was my birthday last week, and we had a little party at my bar in the back garden. And Ollie, at around 4 in the morning, decided to start belting out some tunes from behind the bar.
I'd forgotten about that.
I completely forgot what a cracking set of pipes Ollie's got. And it's just, I think it's just going to be really, really good fun. 4 games with the college game as well, 5 games with the high school game, and a great group of people coming. I genuinely cannot wait, Ben.
No, neither can I. It's been really good putting it together and also talking to the people that are coming on the tour. So I think everyone's going to get on. Hopefully they will, because it's 10 nights together. And I think the first night will be a good icebreaker. We were umming and ahhing, weren't we, a bit about the karaoke, but I think it'll be good. And if we've got, you know, some way of recording a bit of it, maybe we can put it on Twitter or something. I don't know. I think that'll be a good start. And then we've got the game on the Sunday with the Texans. And then there's a stadium tour on Monday for those that want to go and see NRG Stadium. And we've got a few people that would like to do that. So we'll get on the field.
Well, they can go and see where Will stole Tom Brady's jersey.
Yeah, that might be.
If you've never done a stadium tour before, it is so worth doing one. It's really genuinely massively worth your time. I like the idea that if there's a group that are going on the stadium tour, one of maybe me or Ollie goes with them, or you go with them, and then we take a second group out for the Space Center or a tour of Houston, and do something a bit different.
That's what I'm thinking.
Like, kind of mix it up a bit.
And then we'll all meet in the evening and have some beer and watch the Monday night game.
What is the Monday night game that week?
You've got me on the spot there. I can't remember.
Yeah, that is dreadful of me. I do apologise.
I put it on the itinerary, but I can't remember who's playing. It's not a bad one, I don't think. I'll have to look it up.
I think it's Packers Lions.
Packers Lions. Great game.
Yeah, you go.
Well, we won't be without Rodgers, but what?
Yeah, it's Packers Lions. There we go.
Yeah, Packers Lions. There you go.
In Lambeau, so there's a small chance.
It's at Lambeau, so there's a chance. But
there's no chance.
There's a chance.
I tell you what. What's going to be more enjoyable than anything else is watching a Packers game with Ollie Hunter is one of the most emotionally roller coastery type experiences you can ever have in your life. So it's going to be a joy.
I think we've got another couple of Packers fans with us as well on the tour, I think. I'll have to check on that. But so yeah, you'll have some support on that. And it's a tough one, isn't it? Losing. I mean, I can't remember a team taking such a sort of sudden dramatic downturn in fortunes as the Packers did last week. From a personal level, I know you never talk about fantasy teams, but he was my fantasy quarterback, and I was pretty, pretty devastated to lose Aaron Rodgers. I know you don't care. But
I care.
I care about your fantasy team, Ben. I just don't care about Ollie's.
That's fair.
Well, to cheer you both up, Carson Wentz was on my bench, so that was okay.
Oh, get out, mate. That is very upsetting. That is shocking. Very, very shocking. And listen, the fact is, we've already been questioned about this on Twitter, about whether or not we're going to do a tour in 2018. What would have to go wrong, Ben, for us to not do a tour in 2018? Just how bad do we have to behave for you to say, I'm not doing this again?
I have a high tolerance for bad behaviour, so we should be okay. I mean, you're going to replay this, aren't you, in 2 weeks? But I think it's a fairly good chance that we'll look at 2018, nice and early. But we'll wait. You know, we'll wait till everything comes out next year. But you know, as far as the schedule goes, but I think we'd like to make this an annual thing, wouldn't we? So
I'd love to. Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are people who missed out this year because, you know, we put it together nice and early and let people know. But for people, it is, you know, a big expense. But it's something that actually, if you save just a couple of hundred quid a month to one side, to go on a dream trip, which it does, I think it is, even though you're having spent 10 days with me and Ollie, it's a dream trip for everything apart from that. I think it's well worth it. And so if we do it again next year, which hopefully we will do, hopefully there'll be plenty of the people listening who have missed out this year who'll come along. Because, the more fans we get along, the more fun it's going to be. The more the merrier, quite literally.
Yeah, I think it could build up a bit of a status, couldn't it, on the American side as well. We've got really sort of positive reaction from everyone we've been talking to about, you know, just sort of meeting up. And we've got some happy hour bars in each city, you know, we've got a welcome happy hour in New Orleans on the Tuesday night. There's a place in Baton Rouge that wants us to stop by before the LSU game and things like that. And then that will be, I mean, the LSU sort of tailgating experience will just be, I think they're all going to be really good, but that will be a slightly different thing because they're just mental in Baton Rouge. So, and the food's, I've been looking at places we can go eat and things like that. And it's just a bad idea before lunch to look at all these, you know, menus in these bars.
Right, so, I'm gonna make you talk about the Ravens, Ben.
Yeah.
Thursday night football. Now, we talked about this on the TalkSport 2, the NFL show with Nat last night, and I kind of keep convincing myself either way on this game because I don't think the Dolphins getting one quarter of production out of Matt Moore and having some ridiculous comeback is one thing. Putting it together over four quarters, giving and a lot of people are looking at the fact that the Vikings and particularly that one big run kind of against the Ravens got the run game going, but it felt like it was kind of gradually as the game went on. I'm feeling Brandon Williams, 4 or 5 more days to get himself a bit more healthy, will be able to perform through four quarters. Jay Ajayi is very, very streaky. I think if you can stop the run game, your vanilla offense might just only have to score like 14 to 17 points and they'll be fine.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, 5 Justin Tucker field goals would probably do it, wouldn't it? I think they're not exactly setting the world on fire themselves, the Dolphins. I mean, having watched them in person at Wembley, it wasn't great. I don't know why they don't run Ajayi more when they get to sort of, you know, within the red zone, and especially when they get to the 5-yard line. I think Brandon does make a big difference to the Ravens' Rundy. I mean, without him, it was a shocking drop off on the effectiveness of stopping the run. The secondary, ironically, is about the strongest part of the defense anyway. I'd have felt probably more comfortable going against Jay Cutler than Matt Moore this week. But yeah, I think it's not going to be. I saw your tweet about the Thursday night games being better than the Sunday night games. This could be a dramatic reversal, but then there's also sort of is a classic setup for it could be an amazing game. You never know. I mean, it's unlikely. I think it's going to be a stretch to be a good game, but it's one that is winnable for the Ravens. But I think their confidence is in such decline. The offense is honestly, on Sunday, I really can't think of too many less effective Ravens offenses in the time I've been watching them since, you know, the early 2000s, and they've had some bad ones. I mean, they've had, you know, Stoney Case and Kyle Bowler and people like that, but I think, you know, the injury is undoubtedly a factor, but it's also combined with the fact that Flacco really doesn't look particularly interested anymore.
This is a question for you, Ben. I don't want to be too negative, but say the Ravens lose on Thursday night and it starts to look like the AFC North is kind of slipping away from your potential grasp. Is there some thought, Flacco's only getting paid $12 million next year. His contract was heavily, heavily front-loaded. If you're picking in the top half, top 10 of the draft, that you start to think to yourself, it's quarterback of the future time.
I think they have to be at that point very soon. If not, I'm not sure that, I mean, since the Super Bowl, there's been a sort of, certainly a downturn, and the contract, there's been a downturn in his productivity and his play. And I do question watching on a weekly basis the motivation as well. I don't think he doesn't care. But, I mean, it's starting from the head coach down. There are severe time management issues, urgency issues. Our two-minute drill may be one of the worst in the NFL, if not the worst. Even towards the end of the game on Sunday, there was, you know, it's like there was no awareness as to what the task in hand was, if they even want to try an onside kick and get the ball back and try and win the game. So, I think it's getting to the point where quarterback of the future time is required. And I think that, you know, certainly if it keeps going the way it's going, I'd be very surprised if Harbaugh is there again next year, because, you know, Bishot, he'd made a similar call when Billick was kind of at the end of his tenure. And I think when you see that the team, it really don't have have any sort of urgency or desire showing on the field like it was on Sunday, that's the start of the end for a head coach, when it looks like the message might not be working anymore as well. So I think there could be seismic shifts this off-season for the Ravens.
My feeling on it, Ben, is that Flacco is effectively just a slightly worse version of what he's been throughout his career, except for that one playoff run. But on Harbaugh, I've always said on this show that I think he, to me, is probably the second or third best coach in the NFL. But I look at it at the moment as a situation where it's just gotten a little bit stale, and maybe both parties would benefit, because I think John Harbaugh goes to another NFL team and probably continues to have a successful career. But do you think it just almost needs a new bit of impetus to stop something that's basically gone stale?
Yeah, I think it does, and he was the right guy to come in at that time. After you needed a slightly more authoritarian figure with a bit more structure than Billick used to impose, and Billick was a bit more, you know, kind of letting the veterans take over the team. And they called his training camp Camp Cream Puff. Now, obviously, Harbaugh's had a slightly harder version of training camp, and we've lost about six players before the season starts. So I think that, you know, I think it's just a fresh face, a fresh approach is sometimes needed. I think it's been quoted that, you know, the most that an NFL head coach can expect to enjoy is sort of a 10-year tenure before things start getting stale and going south. And he's in his 10th season, so I think that's just the way it probably needs to go for this organization. And you know, Bishot is not afraid to make those calls, but he's also very loyal. So I think, you know, he'd be the one that would be able to evaluate at the end of the season, you know, the best way forward and make that call.
Yeah, I mean, I guess is the just a slight argument though with just the amount of injuries that you did have, that if you kind of extrapolate that onto any other team in the NFL, that maybe they'd be enduring similar struggles as well.
You could, and you also have to. I mean, you have to question as well. This is 2 years in a row where they've been horrendously affected and had guys go down all over the place. And when does it stop being coincidence? And when is there a question mark over the sort of the conditioning practices, you know, the strength and conditioning coaches and things like that, as to what is actually going on away from the games and in practice that is leading to so many people dropping? That's, I mean, some things you can't avoid, but you know, it does seem that some teams tend to remain healthier than others, and I'm not sure whether there's, you know, whether I'm being conspiracy theorist here or what, but it's frustrating, and so I don't know, but I think it's from gauging the fan base, you know, there's a lot of disillusionment, and I think you have to sort of temper that with remembering, yeah, they've got two Super Bowls in 13 years or whatever it was, and you know, the Ravens are one of the more successful franchises. You have to be, to an extent, careful for what you wish for, but I think that you know, it does also have one of the better sort of front office combos in Ozzie and Eric DaCosta, and it is still a very well run organization. So I think that the fear of dropping into an abyss of nothingness if they got rid of Harbaugh is not really justified. I think the change is needed sooner rather than later.
Look, Matt Sherry doesn't understand any of that because he's both a Patriots and a United fan, so he doesn't understand
Leeds United.
In his, yeah, exactly.
Sheffield United.
Yep, Sheffield United.
Newcastle United.
No, none of these.
Oxford United.
I'd love it if it was Oxford United.
Great.
It'd be such a weird choice.
And in fairness, Man United.
Oh, here he goes.
No.
Shut up, Matt. You are in your early to mid-20s. You do not understand sporting pain.
He's from Hartlepool. Why is he supporting Man United? Get out.
Right, let's pick this game, because I am slightly concerned that the Dolphins' defence is a little too legit for the 17 to 20 points that the Ravens will need. It is home on a Thursday night, though. I do tend to pick the home team. I'm just kind of tempted to pick Ravens because Ben's on the phone, and then actually pick Miami online and just never tell him it's going to happen.
Oh, that's disgusting.
I'll see it. If you make your gridiron picks Miami, I will see it.
Oh, I'm gonna take the Miami Dolphins. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Ben, I'm taking Ravens.
I'm definitely taking the Ravens. I think they'll win this.
Yeah,
I will then, of course, take the Ravens, because I can't really not take the Ravens on in public, can I? So I will take the Ravens, and I'll say they will actually crazily show up and win by 14 points.
Beautiful. I absolutely love that. Look, Ben Mortimer, Touchdown Trips, as you well know, you need to check them out online, Facebook, Twitter, absolutely everywhere, because Touchdown Trips, and the feedback we're getting from people who've been out with trips on them this year has been astounding. So brilliant to chat with Ben, as always. And Ben, we will see you in about 8 or 9 days' time. Do we need to send Ollie to the airport the night before to start showing these guys a good time early?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be there from sort of 6 o'clock the previous evening, so you just show up at our hotel and...
just let Ollie drink all the way through. Hotel bars tend to stay open all night long, Ollie, so...
I think this one is, and they start serving breakfast from 4 a.m, I've checked, so...
I love breakfast.
As long as you're there in the departures area, we'll all get together, go to the bar, and maintain that for the next 10 days.
Beautiful stuff.
Here in a couple of weeks, Ben. I'm heading out next Wednesday, but on a different schedule than you guys at the start.
Nobody cares, Matt Sherry. Nobody cares. Everyone cares about what we're doing on the tour. look, brilliant stuff. Thank you to you, Ben Mortimer. And that kind of wraps up our show. So thank you to Matt Sherry. Thank you to Ollie Hunter. Ollie, any final thoughts?
No.
Clearly. So thank you very much for listening, as always. We'll be back with a preview of week 8 over the weekend. You've been listening to The Gridiron Show.